This episode of Current Geek is brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptional, comfortable sleep experience, one night at a time. Get $50 off select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and use the promo code GEEK at checkout.
I have
Current Geek! Current Geek! Current Geek!
Everybody, and welcome back to Current Geek, the weekly proceedings and the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, Geeks of the World, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I am Scott Johnson, and he is Tom Merritt.
And let me tell you, folks, Scott Johnson is persevering today. I'm the one who went to the Consumer Electronics Show, but somehow Scott got the cold. I'm so sorry, man.
He did some sort of weird parallel transference or something. So while you're looking at greased up TV knobs everybody's been touching all week in Vegas, somehow I got the thing that maybe you should have gotten, but I wouldn't wish this on you anyway, so it doesn't matter. I'm glad you're well.
Well, I'm sorry you're not feeling well, but you know, kudos to persevering and being on the show, and we're here to pick up the ball and run with it.
Yeah, there's no way I was skipping this because one of our guests anyway got canceled on last time because of illness, and I don't want to do that again to him. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the program, an old friend and the host of the MacCast among many other rad projects. It's Adam Christensen. Hello, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, man. It's good.
I made it back in time somehow, right at the intro of the show. I quit Safari.
Oh, perfect. Well, I'm glad you did that. I didn't even notice. As far as I was concerned, you were still there.
Went away and came right back.
Did you happen to have the video in a separate window than the rest of your tabs or anything like that?
Correct. Yep, exactly.
And I was like, that exact thing. You're like, well, I don't need these open.
Yeah, I've done that. Oops. It's all right, make you sweat a little bit. That's what we're here for, buddy.
It's all right. We're good. I'm good, and I'm glad you're here, but I would have totally understood if you had canceled too, because like I was saying earlier, I had that exact same flu over Christmas.
Yeah,
and it was just devastating.
I had the shot too, and I was talking to a pharmacist buddy of mine who said, yeah, this year's shots were kind of off the mark. I'm like, are they ever really, really on the mark? Like, do they ever really just get the one that's going to be out there? I don't know if it does or not.
Well,
that wouldn't be Dan, would it?
Yeah, it would be Dan, actually. It totally is Dan.
I mean, the problem with flu shots, we should probably introduce our next guest first before I get into it. But, you know, the problem with flu shots is they can't defend you against every variant. The flu is just too...
Right. It's too hard, right? And they can't give you 1,000 of them, or else that's not good. You can't have all that pumped through your veins, I don't think. It just seems impractical. So, I'm just a mess, and it's fine because I'm here. I'm among friends. One of them is joining us now, Bryce Castillo. You know him as a producer. He does incredible work for both Night Attack, Modern Rogue, and other rad web projects.
Cord Killers, of course.
I almost forgot. Bryce, welcome back to the show, man.
Thank you. This is my first time on.
Is it? I thought it was your second time.
This is the first piece from. I'm excited to be on.
Well, welcome back for the first time.
It's the fever and chills. It does feel like you've been here before. Why do I feel that way? That's really weird.
Nice, man. He's so friendly and engaging. You're just like, I feel like you've always been here.
He's
I know we've seen each other at conventions and stuff, but I think this is our first time on a call together.
Yeah, Scott. Well, outside of movie draft, which is interesting. Night Attack, but which is interesting because my favorite thing about movie drafts now is your commentary. You're the reason you're the reason I show up. I mean, F this movie business. Who knows who's going to win? I don't know what's going on, but I show up there. Oh, the fever's talking again, Tom. It's like taking my brain over again. I could go on for an hour about why I go to see just the movie draft just for Bryce.
Well, why don't you cue up the proper sound effect?
Okay.
And then announce that we'll be doing some news.
How about this?
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
All right, now you can tell me the news.
And here's the best part. With the fever, you did it perfectly.
There was
no mistake.
Thank you very much.
You didn't have any problem.
Yeah.
Wired reports. What do you
think? Yeah.
Wired reports that papers in Science and Science Robotics are describing muscles for robots that use a series of oil-fueled pouches activated with electricity. So, yes, you heard me right. Muscles for robots. It's similar to a human muscle in strength and efficiency, but can do more contractions per second than we can. The hydraulically amplified self-healing electrostatic actuator, or HASEL for short, could also be used in prosthetics. So could be used to make robots that can pick stuff up, could be used to give someone an arm or a leg that works like a normal arm or leg. Mm. Combine that with some self-healing material for the skin, and you have yourself a pretty good soft robot.
So we're asking, we're once again stepping into territory where we're, you know, it's easy to say, oh, this is where it begins, guys. This is the beginning of the end. This is where the robots start to take on, you know, attributes that are purely been human up to this point, and now they can heal. So if you're stabby on a robot that's trying to break into your house in the future, that robot will just go, they'll just Wolverine through this and just heal up and come in there anyway. But I'm not going to take that tact. I think this sounds great. And I think people who've lost limbs due to accidents or war injuries or that sort of thing, if we can get to a place where they have more lifelike musculature and healing properties to the arms and legs that get replaced, I don't see that there's a downside to that. So I throw around the room, Bryce, you excited about the future of fake arms and legs that have robotic muscles in them?
Yeah, especially in the field of prosthetics. Like, if we're talking about full-on robotics, that's one thing. And the Wired article and the scientific articles go into the power requirements. You know, if these things lose power, then you got a floppy robot on your hands. But in terms of prosthetics, as a way for people to be able to have finer control over prosthetic hands, that's huge. And that's a huge step into helping people who are amputees.
Yeah, I completely agree. Adam, where's your head at on this? Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's totally cool technology. It does feel like it's just really a natural evolution of the muscles robots already currently have, which is just standard hydraulics, right? So this is just a better, more humanistic version of that. But that's really cool. And I also just think when you gave the acronym, Tom, it's like, wow, they got the acronym off just by a hair. Like, shouldn't it have been like Hustle?
Hydraulically unamplified, but it is amplified. So
it is amplified. So. Yeah. But yeah,
it's a little bit of a hassle.
You know, like hustle.
Yeah, less hustle.
Not
than
only for the movement aspect, but it also kind of sounds like muscle.
Sure.
Well, and this one is the first, so it will obviously go into the Hall of Fame. So it will be the Hasselhoff.
Oh, I see. Oh my gosh, dude. It's like we set up a tee, put the ball on it, and told Tom to get up there and whack it. We really did with that one. Well done. Well, I don't want to say I asked Tom to whack it. Honestly, I would like to take that phrase back.
Especially when you're talking about soft robots that go all floppy. That's just something we don't make it into.
We don't need to go there.
You know, in all seriousness, though, soft robots is a big area of research because they are less dangerous. You could work alongside them. And if all of the muscles are actuated by steel pistons, that's more dangerous if something goes wrong. So
yeah,
this is pretty cool. If you want to try this at home, apparently, according to the Wired article, fill up a Ziploc bag kind of partway with air and then press on one end of it and you'll see the other end of it sort of lift up towards you. That's how these work, roughly.
Oh,
and that's the amazing thing about this technology is that it doesn't require an external source of like hydraulic fluid. It's self-contained.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Which is pump it in. Yeah.
Wow. That, what a simple piece of physics to apply to a thing that sounds super, super advanced. I like that.
Yeah, very cool.
Yeah.
Variety reports that Marvel has hired screenwriter Jack Schaefer to write a script for a Black Widow movie, finally.
Whoa.
Black Widow's been in most of the Avengers-related movies, but always in a supporting role. Schaefer wrote the reboot of Dirty Rotten Scoundrels called Nasty Women that's due out later this year. She also wrote Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Oh, my. Okay, so that's
but
a really...
Maybe we shouldn't hold that against her.
Well, we better not.
Olaf's Frozen Adventure was fine. As someone who did not see Frozen, I went in to see that blind. I didn't even know it was in front of Coco. Mm. And for wasting 22 minutes of my time, it was fine.
I think more people were upset that it was 22 minutes long, and they're like, come on, right. I want to see Coco. Yeah.
That is a long... Yeah. It's not a short at that point, right? Yeah. We got to stop calling it a short.
TV special.
Yeah.
I have to say, on this, both my daughters are super excited because one of my oldest daughter's favorite artist is Brian Kessinger, and he did he was art director on Olaf's Frozen Adventure.
Oh, nice.
And then the connection to the writer is, or they just have always wanted a Black Widow movie, like that's one of their favorite characters in the whole Avengers series. And you know, so
the only one, the only thing I'm a little bit not worried or the only thing that's I'm a little down about in terms of a Black Widow focused film is at this stage in the game, she has always provided this rad kind of anchor point for the other movies. So she comes in and makes things like Winter Soldier a better film. That is arguably my favorite Marvel movie, but part of the reason is because she added something to it that it wouldn't have had otherwise. And I like that that's her role. She comes in, she makes everybody better, and then she leaves. Getting a movie directly related to her means that she's going to have other people play that role for her. And I'm not as into that. Like, I like that she kind of saves everybody else's butt and she's the one that's kind of smart on her feet.
Or it could just be a serial adventure of her going around saving everybody's butt.
Sure. It could be that. But I go
from movie to movie, all the in-between moments, and then that's the climax is she gets there to save the day.
Well, did you... Okay, so Bryce, you saw the short, quote-unquote short, the 20-minute animated thing. I went and saw Coco after they had pulled it, so I didn't ever see it. Is there anything about that short that makes you go, oh, I'm glad they got that writer. Stoked about that for Black Widow.
It's a cute movie. I think it's tough to compare what a Black Widow movie could be to Olaf's Frozen Adventure, because Olaf's Frozen Adventure is a kid's special, you know? It's hey, everybody, what's our holiday traditions? And so maybe that means we get a very traditional take on an action movie with Black Widow, which I think could be fine. I mean, Marvel...
Well, but she's also writing nasty women. So that sounds like it might be a departure from Olaf. I don't know.
And am I thinking of the right thing? Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is the old Steve Martin thing. Caine thing. Okay. I wonder how that'll be. Anyway, whatever. I used to love that movie. I watched it recently.
That was a good movie. Yeah.
It's okay. It holds up
Hold up. I liked it when I was younger.
It's there. I mean, it's okay. It exists.
Most of the stuff from my childhood does not hold up. I've come to realize.
Time for a reboot, huh, Scott?
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, maybe you're making a good argument in favor for the reboot. And maybe we need it or whatever. But that was a Frank Oz film. And I remember at the time being super jazzed that one of my favorite puppeteers was making movies. I thought that was really cool. So I don't know who's doing this one. But I'm excited about this regardless. I mean, Marvel has yet to truly disappoint me. I really like her as a character. And I'm all for this. So bring it on, Black Widow.
Well, also something that got brought on this week was the Consumer Electronics Show in unincorporated Clark County, Nevada. And it featured things like a new higher-res HTC Vive VR headset with a wireless component now that you could even add to the old HTC Vive, a screen from LG Display that can roll up and be stowed in a base, a 146-inch modular TV from Samsung called The Wall. Also featured small hearing aids that can't be seen when you're wearing them, an intelligent toilet with hands-free flushing from Kohler. But out of all of the things announced at CES, our subreddit decided that robot strippers return to CES 2018 was the CES story most valuable to the show today. Robot strippers were last seen at CES in 2013. It does not appear that these that came this year are any different.
Okay. Were they working the pole, or were they just free roaming stripper robots?
I didn't really pay attention that much closely.
They're in the pole, Scott.
All right, okay. Good. Here's the question I have about a couple of these things. So, first of all, I always like to put a comma after hands and free before the Kohler thing, because it sounds like you said, featuring hearing aids, blah, blah, blah. And then you said an intelligent toilet with hands, free flushing from Kohler. So I like
that's
the idea
the way
that
I said it. Really,
I like that it had. Well, no, it's the way my brain heard it. I like the idea that the toilet has hands and it sort of helps.
We're dealing with sick Scott today.
Yeah, we are.
The cold medicine talking.
I told you it was going to get bad. How did you get a chance to see the wireless Vive thing? And does it look like it's any more compact outside of the fact that it's wireless now?
Well, no, the wireless thing is its own component, so it just kind of clicks. In fact, if anything, it makes the thing bigger because it clicks onto the back, like it's for the tether. So you're not tethered anymore.
Okay. That seems pretty cool.
HTC Vive Pro is the new version with the higher res screen. It's a little more streamlined, but not a ton.
Yeah. Well, the higher resolution and the better
optics. Because the other thing, it has the headphones included now, so you don't have to provide your own headphones, which, again, adds another thing.
Yeah. What are you guys, either of our guests, excited about these or other items, like roll-up TVs and that sort of thing?
The roll up TV sounds cool.
Yeah.
Like those old projector screens, but now that's the TV.
Well, the way it worked, the one I saw was the LG one, and Tom is at this, I don't know if this is the only one they showed there, but it just slowly would rise up out of this box. So you could tell it was rolled inside of there, and this OLED screen would go, and then
that's the only one they showed.
Okay, so if that's the only one, The only question I have is clarity, and I have a few other questions about it, but what it looked like on screen, they had it running while it was unfolding. And that was pretty impressive. Like, I looked at that and went, all right, that's some Star Trek future right there. I don't know how practical it is or how much I'd want to have a box that very slowly rolls up my TV and puts it away again. Maybe if you have little kids or something.
Well, you know, that's the thing is I spend so much time every week putting my TV away.
Yeah. Yeah. <It's> a-
And as you're doing it, you're like, if only I had a better way.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, Adam? The idea of a rolling screen.
Well, I think it's great, but, you know, like most things at CES, it has no price and no ship date. So,
well, you know, yeah, and to be fair, this is LG Display showing off the technology to say, hey, manufacturers, we can do this for you.
Right.
Would you like to put this in your televisions? Yeah. Obviously, LG Electronics will probably be one of the first to do it because they work very well with LG Display. But it wasn't meant to be. Yeah. Sometimes people are like, this is a great product. You're like, when's it ship? I don't know. Yeah. This was more trade show aspect of it, of like, hey, we figured out how to do this, so we'll let you know.
But there is there's a max spin on this, Adam, I would like to ask you about, and that is that if this technology, like a rollable display or one that you could roll up or lay flat on a table and kind of move around it almost like you could a big piece of paper or something, that would be a really cool way, at least for artists who are used to working on Macs, to end up with a pen display/display. Like, I would love a thing I could sort of move around. It would be thin enough. If it folded, it wouldn't matter. If it curled up under my lap a little bit, it wouldn't matter. Like, it would still sort of work. Like, that's what I want. And I realize this has nothing to do with touch technology or any of that.
Right. Robot strippers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, on the roll up display kind of thing, like for TVs, it's great. But, you know, as was pointed out, you know, we're not always, the TV kind of stays stationary. So it'd be cool for, like, you know, a hotel, or if you wanted a piece of furniture that your TV popped out of. But the applications you're talking about, you know, like foldable displays or rolling displays that we've talked about for a long time. I think for me, even as like a coder, you know, I have my 15-inch laptop when I go out. If I had something in my bag that just rolled out and I had a giant, you know, 27-inch screen that compacted down into something I could carry around and connect, I mean, that adds a lot for portability too. So like this technology has a lot of, I think, really practical applications, you know, once it becomes a viable thing. It's, I mean, obviously early stage at this point, but the fact that they have one functioning, they can show it rolling up, that's really cool. And I also kind of just like the idea of the style of, like, we're going back to scrolls.
Mm-hmm. Yes, these will be tablets soon too.
Yeah.
Right.
Let me look at my news app.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, before we move off of the CES, can you give it a grade? Like, let's say we're in school and there's an A through F kind of scale here. How'd you feel about CES overall?
Yeah, man. I mean, my grade of CES would be about my own experience. CES is far too vast and it's not a competition. You know, as much as people are like, who won CES? Was it Google or Amazon? Mm. It's not really like that. So, I mean, it was I hesitate to give it a grade, but I'll say it was a B because it didn't have the big stellar advances in new types of products. You know, this wasn't a year that we got a Slingbox or something like that, but there was a lot of platform advancement, a lot of things taking advantage of things like Amazon Voice Services or Google Assistant or smart car platforms or smart home platforms. So it felt like there was a lot of different products that were interesting.
Yeah.
But we're taking the time to take advantage of the advances that we've made rather than showing off new advances.
Hmm. Well, I'm very curious about what that all looks like in the coming weeks. I know you've been doing a ton of coverage, but that stuff tends to suss itself out, and Gizmodo or somebody will find a little thing that nobody had heard of that barely anyone saw on the floor.
Well, the show ended today, so it's kind of all... It's pretty much done.
Yeah, it's over with, but I always feel like there's a little nugget somebody missed, and we'll always get like a little something later.
A little nugget.
Yeah, like a little nugget.
Can I just say, I really appreciate that Scott immediately diverted us away from the thing that we were supposed to talk about.
Which was strippers? Yeah,
because I had no interest in talking about that, because it's just horrible.
Five-year-old. I was prepping for the show. I was like, what are we going to talk about for robotic strippers?
I don't know.
That it just it's symptomatic. It's symptomatic of a lot of the issues that we have in tech right now.
Right.
That a lot of people are dealing with.
So I'm glad we kind of diverted away. Somebody thought it was a better time for it than it was 5 years ago. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't.
I mean, is it just because it's Vegas? Do we give it any kind of pass for that? Probably not.
Probably. I think in somebody's head it was like, but they're robots, so it's better.
Oh, well, they're wrong.
So it's okay.
Yeah. No,
well, they've got those CCTV camera heads, so it's like high art.
Yeah, right. That's what we'll call it for now.
Well, hey, on January 1st, 2019, that's next year, for the first time in 40 years, creative works will lose copyright protection in the U.S. and fall into the public domain. That means things published in 1923 will no longer be copyright protected. This was about to happen in 1976 and 1998, but each time the U.S. extended copyright. Now, it does not appear that there's any political will to fight for another extension, so the idea of public domain will reappear in the U.S. for the first time in some people's lives.
Yeah.
Granted, it's 90 years plus the life of the author, so not every single thing created in 23 will go into public domain, but we'll get a bunch of stuff.
There's a lot of really weird old animation and music that I'm excited about. I love that era of like just, you know, hello, my baby, that kind of stuff. I don't know if that song's up for up for renewal or not, but that era of stuff is some of my favorite things ever, and I love using it for podcasts here and there, and I would love to have more of it and longer portions of it legally. So this would be great. But you say there's no, I mean, when you say there's no interest or effort politically to extend this again, let's say they don't. Does that set a new standard in that we are cool with the current one and no longer do we need to extend this out and make it even longer, you know, the lifetime of a guy plus his three grandchildren?
Well, Steamboat Willie expires in 2024. Disney has generally been the one saying, let's extend it again. Right. This time they're not. But when the rubber meets the road in 2024, we'll find out just how okay with it they are.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, like most companies are saying, you know what? We're actually finding it hard to do things with copyright being so long. In fact, the Authors Guild is even arguing for shortening it back to 50. And the Authors Guild is a copyright protection organization for authors of written works. But what they're saying is, you know, a lot of our authors want to play with themes and stories that were written in, you know, in the 30s, and they can't. It makes it very difficult. So there's even a little bit of a backlash, not just from individual activists, which has been going on for a long time, but even from some organizations.
Interesting. I mean, it's not like if Disney wanted to next year make a new Steamboat Willie revival or something, they still could, because now it's public domain and they're part of the public and they could take it and something with
it. You mean in 2024
or in 2024? Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. I keep thinking you mean
Steamboat Willie won't be till 2024.
It's what day is it? Who am I? Who are you guys? I don't know what's going on today.
But
they could already make it anyway. It.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, there's a lot of confusion in our legal geek segment following the show. I'm sure we'll make some of these things clearer for you. But there's a difference between trademark and copyright. The copyright expires on Steamboat Willie, meaning that I can sell you a copy of it, right? With, you know, or I can make a copy of it without violating copyright law. But if I start, you know, trying to brand it, there's trademark law, and Mickey Mouse is definitely trademarked, and trademarks don't expire like copyrights as long as you're using them. So you know, there's still some protections.
So, all right, Adam, how long is okay? Adam, how long is too long in your opinion? Like, do you think? Or not too long.
I was going to ask you guys that, because I mean, all of us here are creators of content that is, you know, enjoys copyright. And like, how do I feel about, you know, like I'm not creating Steamboat Willie. I'm creating podcasts, but you know, that means my podcasts at some point are available to anybody to do whatever with. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay. I would be okay if it was 50 years. You know, like I figure I'm gone. I'm dead. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, but you know, again, I don't see my family making all kinds of residual money off of my content either. So I'd probably feel very differently if it was my estate, and you know, there was value in that ongoing value of that content.
Right. So. In our case, we want as many people to listen to our stuff as possible, so we don't want to slow that process of dissemination of content.
Right.
But when it comes to my artwork, for example, I've got a comic strip that is 14 years old. Somebody in the chat room said 12 years should be maximum on any copyrights. I'm not so sure I'd like that. Like,
right.
I kind of do want to be dead before anybody can do much with my stuff. And so I'm always torn on this, because on the one hand, I'm like, these draconian laws, I can't believe it. But lifetime plus 90 does seem excessive. So yeah. I'd say, why not just lifetime? Listen, here's the deal.
That one might be all right.
Yeah. As soon as I die, my kids have all their adult years while I'm alive to figure out what to do with my stuff. If by the time I die, nobody's done anything, just take it. I don't care. I'll be dead. What do I care? Right?
Yeah. But again, if you had built an empire on the back of your stuff, like a Marvel or a DC or a, you know, like you gotta think there's value there. So.
Listen, I've always said if it was 1650 right now, the year 1650, you would not believe how big my empire is right now in 1650.
Well, I think the Statute of Anne that started off all of this mess was 1648. So you'd be 2 years into it.
It's tricky.
Here's what I believe, and it conflicts with what you two are saying. And I sympathize with your perspectives, but I believe that copyright shouldn't exist to help Scott or help Adam. Copyright should exist to encourage creative works. That's the only reason it exists, is to say, look, what is the law that makes sure that people have an incentive to create? Because when there was no copyright, there was a disincentive. It's like, well, I could make this thing, but then somebody can rip it off and sell it, and then I'm out, right? Mm-hmm. So I am for doing some rigorous work to decide what is the optimal time frame that allows for the creation of public works. And on the one hand, it's what allows Adam and Scott to be able to profit off of their work. And at what point does that profit decline to the point where it's now disincentivizing people to do creative stuff, which is what 90 plus author does, right? 90 plus, plus author says, look, these really old works that you want to riff on, you still can't. So at some point, having a long copyright doesn't bring in a lot of money. It certainly doesn't incentivize people in their old age or after they're dead to create more works. And it stops people from using those works to remix and create new things, which is a very valid way of creating. I mean, Scott, a lot of your artwork is remixing and riffing off things already within copyright law. Imagine what more you could do if you didn't have those restrictions. So I'm for a rigorous evaluation of, let's not say what helps Disney or DC or anybody. Let's figure out what tends to strike that balance of creativity and incentivize that. And go with that. There's been some work on that says maybe 14 years is about optimal. Maybe 23 years is optimal. There's a couple of different studies out there, but let's figure it out. Maybe it is 50. Nobody wants to do that work. Nobody wants to study it and come up with something that is statistically rigorous and figure it out, because everybody just wants what's best for them. And whoever has the biggest lobbyist wins.
All right. So now we've heard many sides of this issue. Bryce, we throw it to you to solve it now. What's your take on it?
So I kind of have a similar stance as Tom does, is that that copyright exists to serve the public interest. Imagine take Gangnam Style, right? It was this song that was a huge worldwide phenomenon. Everybody knows it. For all intents and purposes, that song is something that everyone knows, is something that is, you know, of the time and incredibly influential. But because of the nature of copyright being life plus 95, it hinders any second creator to touch that work, to say, oh man, I could do something in response to this, using this, what have you. And while you have seen a lot of work that might as well technically be illegal, if you look at remixes or parodies outside of the discussion of fair use, you are disincentivizing other creators to springboard off of your own work. Now, I do think everyone deserves the right to profit off of what they create. That's totally that totally makes sense. But also, when you have something that you put out there, at some point you have to say, this no longer belongs to me. This is just information that is out there that I've created to put out into the world for people to know. And I don't know what the number is on that. I don't know if it's life. I don't know if it's a fixed number of years, 20, 25 years. I really don't know. But at some point, life plus 95 is incredibly too.
It's a long time. Well, first of all, here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna use fair use real quick.
Open Gangnam Style.
Okay, that's all I'm gonna do. That's fair use right there, right, Tom? I think that falls under fair use.
Well, because we are making a commentary, and as long as you're using that to illustrate the point, then that is a fair use defense.
Yeah, we're saying, remember that thing that everyone knows?
Open Gangnam Style.
Now I'm pushing the limits because I did it twice. But anyway, the point is, there's that. If I'm 30 and I die and I made something cool, the 90 years kicks in when I die, right? So there's no like, well, average age 72, so we're going to say it's 72 plus 90. The 90 starts the second you die, right? Isn't that the deal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if somebody like...
I don't know if it starts the second you die or...
Maybe it might be a calendar date thing. Pretty much. Yeah.
There's some guy waiting to create the thing like, okay, 30 more seconds.
Yeah. I love that idea. Time. That's why they did time of death. They need to know this stuff.
But I think by not having a good... by having fair use be a sort of nebulous idea, while copyright is a very strict and long term, I think those two ideas butt heads. And I think if we had a more lax or more structured fair use policy, then I think a longer copyright term can be justified. But in a world where fair use is both incredibly nebulous and because so much of what we do is technologically oriented, is on the internet and goes through automated systems that can only sort of fudge fair use, it's not in sync with each other yet.
Yeah, I agree.
Plus there's the whole confusion if you're only mostly dead.
I'm not dead yet. Yeah, you might be on the cart still yelling and they just haven't conked you out yet with a hammer.
Like, does 90 years begin yet?
Yeah, exactly. And chat room's had a lot of good stuff to say. We can't read it all, obviously, chat room, but thanks for kicking in. There is a good idea here from Lisa the Fox. I'm not sure how you say that, about how you need to keep it up or else you lose it. So, for example, if you let your stuff that you've been making for 5 years lapse and it's 5 years later, maybe that's when somebody else can go, all right, you haven't touched this in that long. Kind of like the Sony contract or the Fox contract with Marvel.
You have to register your copyright, and a copyright renewal was part of that system at one point.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's too old and papery and stuff. I don't know. But great topic, though, everybody. Thank you for your input.
Hey, the Sports Business Journal reports that the Overwatch League's $90 million contract with Twitch for streaming rights is the biggest contract in esports history. Which, to be honest, is not that long, but you know, it's been around for a while now. Twitch gets all contests and exclusive rights to half the weekly matches. And the interesting thing is Major League Gaming, which is owned by Blizzard, will simultaneously stream everything non-exclusive, but they don't get half the weekly matches. Those go to Twitch exclusively. Regular season began on Wednesday.
And it has been awesome. I have loved every second of this. If this doesn't pay off for them, it will not be for lack of trying. The production value, the on-screen talent, the players themselves, the games themselves have been out of this world. It has been really, really awesome to watch. And we actually have teams we can root for now and even have skins in the game that look like their uniforms. Like, this is a huge deal. All of that being said, I think 90 million is probably it. Well, I know that for a fact, assuming that the numbers I think in my head are correct on World of Warcraft subscribers, it's still about 25 million less per month than they make on 1 month of average Warcraft subscriptions. So it's the highest ever. Blizzard totally has the pocket for it, which is great. It was also very last minute. This wasn't part of this particular article, but they right up to the line made this deal and it almost didn't get on Twitch. They were going to end up doing it themselves or kind of footing the bill with whoever works with them on the DirecTV deal or whatever. And I think it was important for both sides to come to an agreement because Twitch is where this belongs. But it's been just absolutely awesome. I don't know if anyone else has followed this. Adam, do you follow any of this Overwatch League stuff?
No, I mean, I obviously know what it is and I know about it and I know about the whole platform. But no, I am not a sports guy all the way across the board, either esports or otherwise.
Yeah.
But it's cool. I mean, I think it's cool. It sounds like a great deal and I'm glad it's I'm absolutely glad it's happening because I think it's a neat thing.
Bryce, are you into it?
My worry for the whole thing is I can understand why it would be a last minute thing to get this deal done, because I know esports is already huge on Twitch, things like League of Legends, Dota, like all that stuff has a very dedicated audience. $90 million is a lot of money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's like 30 to even get a team. So when the Kraft people bought their team, and I forget which team they got, Boston, is either Boston or New York or whatever it was. That's like $30 million a pop just to get your own franchise. I mean, they're treating this like an NFL thing, kind of. It's big money, big stakes across the board. And there's a lot on the line. Like, I'm 100% with you. The stakes are really high. And $90 million is not a small amount of change. It has meant that this week on Twitch, all 3 days, Overwatch has dominated viewership on Twitch, easily the highest thing. Blizzard, I think, believes they can make this super mainstream and way more than just a niche product the way that it has been for League or Dota or even Hearthstone. This is their chance to take it to a real... And I don't want to forget, you know, there's CSGO. There's a million other games, everybody. I'm not forgetting your games on purpose, but the point is this feels like this is the big mainstream push, or at least an attempt to take it into living rooms in a way that they never quite have before.
Just for comparison, by the way, because we're throwing around this $90 million and going, wow, that's a lot of money. Right. The NFL contracts are worth $20.4
billion.
Right.
Per season.
Right.
Now, that's not per season. That's like the total contract. So it ends up being about $3 billion a year, and that combines all the networks, but still.
Yeah.
The thing I see, and the question I have is, I would imagine, though, too, a deal like this is going to have a longer term sort of trickle down halo kind of effect on some of these other games and other things. And not only that, but just for general the healthiness of the Twitch network itself, which a lot of, you know, smaller people rely on. So I would imagine that money goes in and helps make the whole platform better and the whole system better. And so, like, it just seems like a net positive to me in a lot of ways, you know, for both advancing, you know, professional gaming like this, and also just for the technology itself.
Yeah, I would say
that, you know, sort of drives it.
I would say your opinion on this is super interesting to me, because as someone who knows what that stuff is but doesn't really follow it or have a big stake in it, I have a lot of biases in sort of the Blizzard farm, so it's hard for me to ever have a very objective opinion what's going on. Everything they do gets me excited. Hearing that from you, I think that is exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to make a net positive forward momentum in this space that is a risky thing to do. And if there's any company on this planet who've got deep enough pockets to do it, it's Activision Blizzard. They can afford the risk, and it can fail for them, but they can afford it. Like I said, a month of WoW subscriptions isn't going to kill them. 2 or 3 months, maybe we'd start to have some problems, but you know what I mean? Like, they can get away with $90 million here and a few million there or whatever. But they're paying these players, and they have these real teams, and millionaire billionaires are buying teams, and they have a lot of interest. And right now, this is their showcase. If this goes well, more teams, bigger league, more divisions, and it becomes, you know, kind of the next big thing. So it's super exciting. And for anyone who's not watching it, I would recommend, if you like any kind of competitive sort of play-by-play anything, whether it's baseball, football, whatever, there's so much to like about this, even if you don't totally grasp what the game is yet. There is some serious talent, and it's incredible. It's really, really fun. You guys should watch it. Anyway, hey, Tom, these have all been wonderful stories, but we don't just prop these up out of nowhere. They don't just fall out of our face. We get help. Who helped us this week?
Well, our subreddit at currentgeek.reddit.com included submissions from I Am Sci-Fi, Captain Kipper, Loop Guru, Jeff Rose, and Big Fat and Smellier.
Whoa.
That's actually his username.
Okay.
I'm not saying it's a description.
It's fine.
They chose that username. So those are all folks who submitted stories, and you can submit stories and vote on the stories at currentgeek.reddit.com.
That is correct. All right. Before we move on, we usually have a pop quiz, and that's true. That's still coming up. But before we do that, we'd like to let our guests talk about current projects they're working on, things they're a little bit excited about. It's not so much a pimping like you do at the end of every podcast ever, but more of a like, hey, what is it you're working on now? What are you into? And we'll start with Adam. What are you doing these days? What's up over there in MacCast land?
Oh, same stuff. A lot of the same stuff that I always do. You know, MacCast is going strong. So if you're into Apple and Mac stuff, you should check that out. You know, outside of that, just personally, I do, I don't know if you know this, I do web development work. I do a lot of WordPress work and that sort of stuff. So I'm building WordPress themes and writing custom plugins for my clients and all that sort of stuff. But yeah,
I always mean to email you, same. And I'm going to do it right now while you're talking. So keep talking.
Yeah, no, I have the same. Right. I have the same problem, Tom, as me. I got this. I have needs that I could pay you for you to do, And I keep forgetting, oh, I should talk to Adam. So now I've been reminded. Sure. Well done, everybody.
Yeah, so if anybody needs that sort of stuff, and you know, like a lot of people, something I had not done for a while, and I'll just mention this real quickly. I finally launched my own Patreon, which took forever. So
nicely done. Well done. Patreons are good. Where can people go to get it? Patreon.com/what?
Mattcast.
Mattcast. Show worth supporting. I've been listening forever, and I like me some Apple stuff, so it's always good to check that out and be on there and all that other stuff. So well done. Bryce, what are you up to these days?
I'm still doing a lot of the same projects that people will know me for, from Scam School, working on Modern Rogue. I do a lot of streaming here on our Twitch channel at twitch.tv/nightattack, including the aforementioned comedy show Night Attack, Chord Killers that Tom does with Brian. And I think I don't have anything to announce yet, but this year I'm really trying to get my personal creative juices going. And I don't know, I have some ideas for some podcasts that I want to get off the ground, but it's a little early to start talking about that in any more definite detail.
Sure.
But I'm really stoked about this year just as a means to, expand more and more of what I'm doing. So
I love that. Yeah. Well, let us know when you do, and we'll push it right here on the show. I keep wanting to say pimp. It's not the best word. It's kind of got a connotation, so I try not to use it, but I'm using
promote, tell people about,
plug.
Why I couldn't think of plug or promote, the other P words, I don't know. I don't know what's wrong with me. Before we get to the pop quiz real quick, it is a reminder to everybody listening that we now have a Patreon ourselves, patreon.com/currentgeek. I want to give a big, warm, open thank you to everybody who has already gone there and signed up to support us. That means a great deal to us, and we really appreciate it. We got really cool stuff to unlock. So if you're interested in supporting the show, head on over to patreon.com/currentgeek and support us today.
Yeah. Just $1 per episode gets you unobtainium level.
Oh my gosh. That means we'll have to kill a whole race of blue cat people.
But we'll That's do your it. $1 level?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know, that's right? It's amazing. Unobtainium. All right. That's it. Let's do the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
All right. It is time for the pop quiz. This is where you guys get to be tested in areas of your expertise. It's not really that big of a deal, but it's fun. Adam, you've been through this before. Bryce, this will be your first taste. It still sounds crazy. I swear you're wrong before, but whatever.
I'll tell you what, though. I do have a good track record of podcast game experience.
Oh, good.
So I'm looking forward to dominating.
All right. Then you're first, actually. So this is perfect.
Okay. So, Scott, next time Bryce is on, keep acting like it's his first time, and I'll balance out.
Okay. I'll do it every time.
You can just explain it that you were unstuck in time.
Got it. So, okay, that's perfect. All right, so here's how it works. We're going to ask you questions in this area of your expertise, which I'll tell you about in a second. Every time you get an answer right, you're going to hear this sound. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. The entire time, Tom will keep score and use the Tom Merritt rulebook. That means all sorts of things could happen. You just never know. Let's start with you. Let's see, category is 1990s pop culture trivia. Because apparently you're a 90s kid. So that's what we're giving to you. So these questions were compiled by Mike Iceworm Boyd. Thank you, Mike, for these. Here's your first question. What is the name of the coffee shop on Friends?
Central Perk.
Congratulations. That was very fast and you got it. Well done. What year did Milli Vanilli lose their Grammy for Best New Artist?
1996
is incorrect. It was 1990.
You know it's not true.
I don't like how quickly you pulled that out, Tom. I don't like how closely you are to the lyrics of...
Wait till I go find the CD.
I don't know, man. What was the release date of the Sega Dreamcast in North America?
January 1st, 1999.
You are incorrect. It was 9/9/99.
No. Oh, so you know close. What?
No, I'm going to give him a half point for confidence. Okay. Sometimes you just deserve a reward for feeling right.
He was very confident. No question about it. All right. How many Oscars did the film Titanic win? Speaking of Jesus. James Cameron here.
15?
15 is, let me find out, judges, is it 15? It is 10 is the answer. 10.
Oh, so you get 0.75 for getting, you know.
You're probably thinking
I love the Tom Merritt rule book. I need to get a copy of this.
Oh, it applies to all things in life, not just dumb trivia. It's a little big. It is pretty big. Show them, Tom.
It's not mine, but it's
Oh
right
my
here.
God, it's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, look at that thing. What is that really though? What is in there? What was that?
The rule book for the quiz, Scott. That's good, obviously. That's what I said it was. Man. So that's what it is.
Just keeping up appearances. Okay, final question in this category. What is the best-selling album of the 1990s?
Ooh. Oh no. The best-selling album of the 1990s.
This surprises me, by the way. So the that's Wannabes. A hint. It's a hint because I was shocked that this was the one.
Do I need to know the name of the album?
If you give me the artist and or name of the album, I think you could win this.
Is it Britney Spears? Is it her first album?
Well, let's find out. It might be a little more ironic. It's Alanis Morissette with Jagged Little Pill. That album featuring the song Isn't It Ironic, which featured nothing ironic in the lyrics. It's so stupid.
You get a hundredth of a point for naming a female artist.
Yeah. And by the way, Rain on Your Wedding Day, not ironic, just bad luck. That's it.
Just sad.
Everything so in that song.
Irony. It's a meta irony.
It's supposed to be. Isn't there there's some big thing about that. Anyway, whatever. Jagged Little Pill sold 13.5 million copies. It was the biggest album selling of 1990s, which surprised me. I thought it ended up being Nirvana or something like that, but you never know. All right. Well done. I think you did really well. However, Adam, step up to the plate, dust it off, because here's your category. It is, let's go back a decade, 1980s toy trivia.
Toy trivia.
Okay. Yeah.
I almost said Troy trivia.
I just watched that series on Netflix. So
1980s Deanna right. Troy.
Yeah, trivia. Deanna Troy. No, you got the. You are right. It is Toy. By the way, I watched that as well. The Toys That Made Us, that one.
I almost watched that.
Yeah.
It's fantastic, Tom. You should watch that. Yeah, you'd really like it. It's totally for us, I think. I feel like. Although, you know, right. If you're going to watch it with your kids.
1980s era can of Coke out.
How do you pull that just out of nowhere? Where is that all the time? Is that a real can?
Yeah.
Is it classic? One of the dancing ones?
Is it classic?
No, this is before they put Coke Classic on it. This is like the last of the pre-New Cokes.
You know, I wouldn't turn a chat person down if they went and captured Bryce dancing right there just then. So clip that out. Let's make a GIF out of it. That was fantastic.
Bottled in Mattoon, Illinois.
All right, well. Let's see how you do. Right, your first question, Adam, is what was used to give Stinkor, the Masters of the Universe character, its signature smell? Did they talk about this on the documentary? I don't remember.
I think they did.
Yeah, they had to have. I may not be to that part yet. I just started the He-Man ones.
Skunk musk. I don't know.
Skunk musk. Let's find out. Nope, it was patchouli oil. Patchouli oil.
Give him the point. That's pretty much the same thing.
It's so dumb. I cannot believe this thing sold more than Star Wars figures. It's so crazy to me. All right. What was the name of the G.I. Joe aircraft carrier toy? This is also the largest G.I. Joe toy ever made, if that helps.
I just watched this.
He might have gotten all these questions from watching this. I don't know.
Yeah, he probably did. USS Massachusetts.
So close. No, it was the USS Flag, F-L-A-G-G. Flag.
All right, we'll give you a third of a point for getting USS.
Yeah, well done. 3.3 points per letter. What was the final 1980 Star Wars toy line released by Kenner? And it had a name. And the hint is, the hint I'll give you is it came out in 1985. So it was a final toy line released by Kenner in the 80s, because this was before the acquisition by Mattel, and that all got changed. So this would have been Kenner's last breath before that.
I can't believe that the company that scored the Star Wars contract couldn't survive.
That's so crazy. Well, you got to watch that documentary. It talks all about it. It's fascinating.
There's a lot about that.
Yeah. It made me want to go back.
I have no clue.
You don't know? Well, let's find out.
I'm just going to pass on that one.
The judges say that you're right and that you're wrong. It says, The Power of the Force. It came out in 85. Kenner wouldn't produce any more Star Wars toys until 1995. But again, that's because Mattel bought it and then just sat on it. They didn't do anything.
You were close to getting a point. You said, I have no clue, which was correct, but then you passed. So
that's true. You would have had a point. You forget that big thick book's got some real dumb rules in it. That was one of them.
Does.
Next up, what year did the Mask toy line and cartoon debut? M-A-S-K, acronym, not the Jim Carrey business.
89?
You are not quite there. 1985 is the correct answer.
85.
85 right. was a big year.
6/10 of a point.
Yeah, that's not bad. I don't know how he keeps track of all this. And then finally, final question. What company produced the action figures for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
Ooh. Playmates?
Oh my gosh. Well done. Killed it.
I think that's the only one I got.
It was really good,
without the Tom Merritt rules.
Right, right. That was really good. You nailed that one. All right, Tom, they've taken their test. They've got their scores. How'd they do?
Well, again, I was going to give him a full point on the last one, but he's going to get a point deduction for mocking the rules.
Oh.
So we end up with a final total of Bryce 2.26, Adam 2.26.
Oh, man. Well done, you guys.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you never know. I'm telling
everybody
you.
Everybody wins.
Everyone always thinks they're going to lose for sure, and I've seen some weird comeback mechanics in this game, so do not stress about it. Hey, everybody. Let's take a quick second and talk about Casper. This whole episode's brought to you by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience for you one night at a time. They're designed by humans for humans. The original Casper mattress combines multiple supportive memory foams for a supportive, quality sleep surface. That's just the right sink and just the right bounce, with a breathable design that helps you sleep cool and regulate your body temperature throughout the night. You're not just any mattress company. Casper offers a wide array of products to ensure an overall better sleep experience. Buy Casper mattresses because they're made right here in the USA. And buying one online is easy. Order it online. It's delivered right to your door in a compact box. You get free shipping and returns in the US and Canada. And you get a 100-day risk-free trial. That's 100 days to try it risk-free. Considering we spend a third of our lives on a mattress, it is very important to truly sleep on a mattress before committing. That's why Casper gives you 100 nights to try it out. I did that, and I kept it. I sleep on it now. I'd be laying on it now, honestly, if I could. Help me get rid of this cold. It'd be great. I have work to do, though. But yeah, at night, that's my favorite place to be. Get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/geek and using the promo code geek at checkout. Terms and conditions do apply. That's $50 toward any select mattress by visiting casper.com/geek and using the promo code geek.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
It's day 84.
Forecast used to be, we just had a story on TMS about a guy that tore a urinal out of a public place and ran into the forest naked with his urinal. It's the weirdest story we've ever told.
I mean, if a bear goes in the forest, he might want a urinal.
Like a ceramic bathroom urinal?
Yeah, walked into a thing, tore it off the wall, and ran into the forest naked. Isn't that crazy?
That guy had to have been a bear to rip a urinal off.
Yeah, that's
wall.
What I'm saying. Super strength. Got the methamphetamine. Anyway, this is a forecast where we predict the future. It used to be this show Tom and I did. Now it's a full-on segment. And Bryce, you did today's prediction. I'll let you do the honors and describe what you think the future holds.
Yeah, so I probably spent the last 3 weeks getting into this Japanese sort of media empire thing called Idolmaster. And the real quick primer on it, if you don't know, is it's kind of like a video game and it's kind of like an anime, but it's about these virtual singers who are voiced by real people. And that got me thinking about looking at this trajectory of quote unquote idol music in Japan, and how if you look at every decade from the 80s to where the idea sort of began, to the 90s, where auditioning and becoming a thing were these very public televised events, to the millennium, where acts like AKB48 were essentially gaming the sales charts by releasing eight, nine, 10 versions of the same singles at a time, and having voting cards inside, and basically taking a small audience and ballooning it into these huge astronomical sales that had not been seen in almost two decades, into now, where acts like Hatsune Miku are very mainstream ideas, where that is a completely synthesized creative force. There is a voice, I guess technically there's a voice actress for Hatsune Miku, but it is people using a fully virtual tool. And it got me thinking that we are not very far off from the idea of a band being supported by a neural network. I think in the next year or two, we could see someone marketing themselves as, oh yeah, I am using a neural network to help write my lyrics or to help make melodies. And I think the second that floodgate opens, you can snowball from there. You could have a neural network say, okay, if I make this melody, it will work well with this bass line, and it will put these parts together where it could make, it could compose a song. And then because audio production technology is automation focused, you could have a neural network say, okay, I've made this composition, now I'm going to arrange it. I'm going to take synthesizers and actually create it. Like, I think within the next 10 or 20 years, you could have, at least as far as the creative side, a neural network handle almost every single part of music production from start to demo, right? I mean, you always need a human to say, oh, you know, this one's not very good, but we'll go with this one. But even then, once you get out of the idea of a neural network making a song, and you give it enough response, it could know, oh, okay, so these sorts of songs go well together. You could have a neural network making its own album. And I don't think we're very far off from that at all. I think technologically speaking, logistically speaking, I don't think we're far from it at all.
We're there now. Like, Tom, you seem to be generating something right now. What are you generating?
This is last year's AI Christmas Carol.
Let's hear it.
Remember this one?
I do, yeah. I do.
No, right. So it was silly, but...
That's how it starts.
It was an AI that did something that it couldn't do before, which was create a syntactically accurate song and melody. And so it's just going to keep getting better and better. And there have been other examples since that of more refined music. In fact, there was a piece of classical music that was made by Emily somebody, except there was no Emily. That was the name of the AI. So it's getting there faster and faster.
Yeah, I actually... totally agree with this prediction, and also I would say yes, we're there where we could start seeing it happen in a pretty explosive way. It ties into something somebody tweeted at us. John Dorchestry on Twitter said, "Would love to hear your forecast segment on digitally replacing actors in a film. I could see the motivation to do this from the studios and the actor being replaced, but not sure how palatable it would be for viewers." Now, the reason I bring this up, it seems like that kind of world, which we've all talked about for years. Actors that aren't really there, but they look and feel as if they are, but we as the audience would know that, and would that be uncanny or not? Or would we ever get used to it? Maybe if it starts in music, we get there faster. In other words, once it becomes acceptable that this entire awesome song that we love and can't get out of our head and we play all the time, or this whole album, once we get past the idea that none of those voices were real, all of the lyrics, all of the beats, all the ups and downs, the stanzas, everything else, was all an AI-driven thing. Once we're okay with that, then maybe we start to be okay with this happening in other kinds of media, more visual forms of media. That's fascinating to me.
I think it can fold either way. You know, a lot of the examples I brought up are very Japanese. If you want to fall down a rabbit hole, look up, I believe it's the Galapagos effect or the Galapagos syndrome, the idea that Japan, most notably being... rather isolated from the rest of the world, created very specific technological outreaches, which is why you have things like Hatsune Miku and idol culture and the things that we've pulled out of Japan, things like Baby Metal or Kiri Pammy Pammy. Those are outliers. Those are on the fringes of those successful insular genres. But I think it can fold either way of this happens and it becomes a huge thing, or it becomes a quirky thing that we look at from the outside.
Yeah. No, I think I agree. Tom, what are you playing now? What's this?
This is Emily Howell, a computer program that created From Darkness Light 3 Prelude.
Ooh, this is trippy.
I mean, this is movie soundtrack level stuff, right?
Yeah, I would say you could put that in a movie. Sure, why not? I mean, so much. I think Bryce is dead on with this. I think this is, it may not even be coming. It may just sort of be here. And we're just in the refinement stage of figuring out what to do with it. And as more and more companies talk about, you know, big AI projects, maybe this becomes part of that. Adam, I heard a tone of not so much. What do you think?
So I've been kind of from the AI side of things, you know, I read a lot of stuff more related probably to things like digital assistants and stuff like that. There was a great article from a couple episodes back in Wired that I read through, where they tried to teach an AI to write a sci-fi novel or a sci-fi short story, where they took, I think, 50 of the, you know, the best sci-fi novels of all time, and they plug it in there and they sort of give it some rules and some. I think where this currently falls down, and the big challenge is for, especially for creative kind of works, is there's not a single formula that you can plug in and give to a computer that has, you know, because computers need rules, and they're very currently need rules, and they're very structured, and a lot of these AIs are built on that. So they're going to have to get much more advanced in terms of being smart enough to know when the rules don't apply or when you need to tweak the rules, or even taking it further into creating new sort of rules and structures and constructs and all that sort of thing. So I think you're right, and right now these have the ability to do it, but it's very formulaic. And as most creative people know, following the formulas is not always the best way to get to the best creative works. A lot of times it's more about not following the formulas and creating something new and those sorts of things.
Right. So it's when AI starts going against those concepts, those traditions and those tropes that we need to start worrying. Right.
Right.
Like that's when they're too smart.
I mean, it's not zero sum. You know, I mean, right. I think you're totally right, Adam, is you know, going back to talking about idols, that is a very specific niche for a very specific subset. But there are still audiences for what we would consider human made music, or music from songwriters and producers. Like, I totally agree with you, which is why I feel like it's 50-50 between having a mainstream presence or not, because. Yeah.
There, I think, you know, just like factory made stuff is always a little different than craftsman made, right? I think music, it will continue to get better and better. Neural networks will get better and better. Machine learning will improve. Just like I showed with the difference between the silly Christmas carol from last year and now this sort of, you know, classical experimental music. So it's proceeding. There'll always be something, whether it's real or not, kind of doesn't matter, right? Like maybe the Kraft cheese tastes just the same as the artisan cheese, but kind of like buying it from the person you could talk to who made it and ask them questions. And I feel like music could end up being the same way, where it's like, oh yeah, right. for certain uses, machine learning made music is fine, but sometimes I want something that I know has soul, that's from a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
use that word. I was gonna bring up the same thing. It's like you kind of have to ask the question, does a creative work or a thing need a soul behind it? Does it need something extra? And I think
well,
in a lot of cases, yes, but I think you're right. There's also a lot of applications where maybe that's not quite as, where you can follow a pretty basic formula and get something pretty substantial.
Right. The only worry or the concern is that one of these days, Adam, someone's going to play a song for you and they're going to tell you afterwards, oh, by the way, you're going to go, oh man, that's really good. Who is that? And they're say, it was made by an AI robot. You're going to go, what? Like, you're going to think there was soul there. And that's
the idea of it being formulaic is not what's going on with machine learning. It's not an algorithm. It's, you know, there's no formula for Go. And then they taught an AI to play Go. So there's something else, whether we call it creativity or not, I'm not sure. Yeah. But it's something different.
Yeah. I hope we're alive for all this. That's what I hope. I mean, Bryce will be. He's a young fella.
I really do think it's so far, it's so close. I think that the beginning of the snowball could happen in the next 24 months. Stephen Bangs mm-hmm. in the chat says, aren't corporate pop stars basically machines? But even then, you have a human image, right? Saying that mm-hmm. that this is the person that we're putting forward. This is the human being we can put into a talk show or a concert or something. And even in these examples of like these anime virtual pop stars, they still have voice actors who are going and actually performing in some instances the things that their character quote unquote does.
Right.
But I think even that last shred of humanity, I think that there's a corner to be fulfilled by ripping that out, for lack of a better word.
Right. Right. Well, it's going to be interesting to see. And I like how short term yours is. It's actually something we could check up on in 12 months when we do this again and see if anything's changed. It's pretty fantastic. Thanks for your feedback in the chat room as well. That is going to do it for today's show. Now, I'd be remiss if we left without like making sure people knew where to go to find our fine guests and more of their work. Let's start with Adam. Adam, where on the internet should people be looking for you, buddy?
Mine's real simple. Maccast.com, Maccast on all your social medias, and Maccast on iTunes if you want to find the podcast.
Go do that. It's awesome. If you're even remotely an Apple fan, even if you don't use app, even if you use the Mac, you're like an iPhone guy or something like that. Great show. You should check it out. It's been around forever. We're old timers here. All of us, actually. We've been making shows for a long time. And I'm telling you right now, Bryce, he may be younger than all of us, but the work he does under the oppressive thumb of Brian Brushwood is making him older by the second. So that I know for sure.
Thank you. Thank you, question mark.
Brian's got two thumbs. One of them's not oppressive.
Right. So. This other thumb is very welcoming and kind. Hey, what's going on over in your world? Where can people find more Bryce Castillo these days?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Brycas, BRYCAS. And you can find most of the shows that I produce on twitch.tv/nightattack. I also will do one man streams over there occasionally. So check that out.
Nice. Tom Merritt, anything else you'd like to add before we go?
Just real quickly, for those of you who liked the episode of Orville about people trapped on a colony ship and not realizing they're on a colony ship, how about a whole novel about that? It's different characters, whole lot of heart. Check it out. Pavaria at TomMerrittBooks.com.
I like it. Do check it out. Also go to frogpants.com and you will find everything I've got going on. Lately, I've been putting up some speed drawing examples of art I've been doing. If you are interested in that at all, kind of the process of getting to a final piece of art from brain fart to art is how I like to say it. You can go look at those. There's like 6 or 7 that I put up in the last 6 or 7 days, about one per day on average. You might enjoy it. It's over at youtube.com/ScottJohnson. Or like I say, you can get everything at frogpants.com. It's going to do it for us here on the show. Thank you all for being here. Brand new show coming up next week. So be here for that as well. Currentgeek.com is our website. Current Geek on Twitter. And as always, currentgeek.reddit.com for our Reddit. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and for our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we start the new year off with a fun one, as we summarize what immediately became my favorite complaint filed in federal court in 2017, a case entitled Lathan Smith versus the United States, the Secret Service, and the President Trump. Lathan Smith is an individual living in the San Francisco Bay Area, and he filed a complaint in December that has made the rounds in IP legal circles for its quirkiness. Mr. Smith is certainly not the first person to file a kooky complaint against the government, but this one has some nuggets that are too rich not to share. The supposed facts stated in the complaint are as follows. Mr. Smith claims to have created a new automotive motor, crank, generator, and engine, as well as fire-resistant sheetrock used in buildings, and toilet paper that is allegedly used by the federal government and city offices. He also claims that the government is messing with his ability to get a job, his ability to use his cell phone to call relatives in North Carolina, and has arrested and tried to murder him on numerous occasions. After stating those facts, Mr. Smith sets forth the legal claims he is making, and they include attempted murder and patent infringement, Yes, he has mixed those two things in the same complaint. For the attempted murder, he argues that the government has stabbed a knife into his neck, has hit him in the face with a passing truck, and is taking his child away. For the patent infringement, he claims that the Secret Service had the patent pushed through and then realized the product would work through computer realization. At this point, you may just want to write this complaint off as a sad story from a troubled man. But then we close with a demand for relief. Mr. Smith asks for the following, and I quote, "I want all my patent from the first one to the last. I want all the money made from them. I also want to be exempt from taxes on my employment and whatever I build through the patents for the rest of time. I also want the United States to stop using my patented ideas. For all the stress, I want them to provide a full body massage the rest of my life daily." So while Mr. Smith wants an injunction against patent infringement, like most plaintiffs, he also wants to never pay taxes again, a la the Armageddon movie script, and a full body massage every day from the government. One would think someone who has escaped numerous murder attempts wouldn't let the government near his body anymore, but here we are. So here's to you, Mr. Smith of San Francisco. Your prayer for relief is one we patent attorneys have never thought to ask for, but a daily massage sounds pretty good to pay us off for patent infringement. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.